Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August 17th, 2001. In the fireside room this afternoon is John Stabb. Today's session number is STJ-2001-01, and it's titled Celebrating Wholeness in Koinonia. Let's listen in.
Wednesday, we talked about claiming wholeness in the public square, about because of our separation of church and state, we somehow feel silenced. Faith is a matter of don't ask and don't tell. How we, as a nation, have suffered for that in some what I consider to be foreign policy blunders, but also in areas of education, other really important things, where we sort of feel like it's not okay to bring our values and our faith commitment into the public discussion, and how to be whole people, we really need to find a way to do that, and it's really important. Yesterday, we talked about claiming wholeness in our understanding of sexuality as it's discussed, portrayed in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, and just a wide range of different sexual practices beyond sort of the nuclear family. We talked about polygamy that was practiced very widely during those times. This concept of levirate marriage, where if your husband died, that his brother was required to father a child for you in his name, kind of an odd sort of thing, and other aspects of sexuality, very broad range beyond what we sort of think of as the nuclear family. What I'd like to talk about today is the broad range of sexuality that I've experienced among folks at St. Francis Lutheran Church. I was kind of people talk about it. Most churches, again, don't ask, don't tell. But when I went there to interview, it was kind of amazing as I was introduced to the members of the call committee. They say, "Well, Brad he's originally from the Midwest. He's gay, and he's not in a relationship right now. So and so she's from Southern California. She's divorced." Another woman, she's straight, never been married. Someone else is gay, been in a long-term relationship, and grew up in San Francisco. So that was just sort of a part of the introduction, and a whole range of different ways in which people live out their sexual lives. Many of them, what we call sexual minorities, gay and lesbian people, divorced people, happily married people, and we all seem to get along pretty well together, which I think is unique. St. Francis is an independent Lutheran church. For that reason, we're not bound by some of the current restrictions that the ELCA, other denominations have. So we have, for those who have requested it, conducted ceremonies of Holy Union for same-sex couples. It's something that currently is not authorized for ELCA churches. And people consider it in different ways. Some it's sort of a blessing of their relationship. Other folks consider it to be a marriage. I've had people say, "Yeah, we were married here at St. Francis 2 years ago." And it's a way to for them to really recognize the relationship that they have, make a public commitment, receive the church's blessing for it, and really acknowledge the love that they share and the commitment that they want to make. I'm going to show, many people haven't, this sounds a little bizarre, two men being married, women being married, I'm sure something that many of you have not participated in or seen. Have a wedding video. It's sort of been edited a little bit so it's only 20 minutes rather than about an hour, which is what the service took. But just so you could see what one looks like. What does it look like to see two women walk down the aisle and exchange vows? These two particular women, Janine Jansen and Mari Urban, are very active in the church. Each of them did a turn as council president, got to know each other in the context of church, and fell in love, and decided to share that love publicly and in a ceremony. And so this is a video of their wedding. I'd like to show it, and then any questions that this raises for you, we'll talk about after you see the video. I guess I need to turn these lights on too.
I can get them.
Two women of Christian faith, incredible integrity and passion. Two people who bring light and wisdom to every life and every situation they touch. Today you will be married. In your sight, in our sight, and in God's sight. As your family and friends and the St. Francis community celebrates this gift from God of your marriage, there are those who would disparage what it is that we are doing today. Let them huff and puff. This marriage will not be blown down. They do not walk in your shoes, nor in ours. They are blind to the varieties of God's creation. They do not understand the truth. If they want the scales to fall from their eyes, if they want to learn, let them come and see this Christian community and let them meet this couple. Meanwhile, the two of you will be building a life together. And we will pray for you, this community of St. Francis, for your good health, for the deepening of your love for one another, and for those whose lives will be touched by what you bring to them as a couple. This is a great day, a wonderful day. Indeed, you deserve each other. And this community, all of us here, will be the better for it. Amen.
Somewhere, each of us must help the other die. loving connection with each other, to know and be known by each other as fully as it is humanly possible?
Yes, this is our intention.
Mari and Janine, are you ready to accept the responsibilities and joys of marriage and to grow in honor and love for yourselves as well as for each other?
Now we are ready, and each of us knows it. I have never loved like this. I have never seen my own forces
so taken up
and shared
and given back.
And to you, family and friends, gathered here today to witness these promises, I ask you, will you do all in your power to uphold Mari and Janine in their promises and in this marriage? By the power of your love
In the light of Christ's resurrection, let us pray for Janine and Mari, and for all families in the world, and for all who long for the grace of new life, saying, God, in your mercy, hear our prayer. Most of all on this day, we pray for Mari and Janine, and celebrate the new life that they are creating together. As they enter into this holy union and begin walking through the routines and rigors of daily life, bless them at every turn. Nurture them in faith, hope, and love not only for each other, but for this community, which has promised to support and encourage them. Keep alive and burning their passion for knowing the other and becoming more fully known to each other, so that as the years pass, they may discover the deep joy of being one in body, mind, and spirit.
The peace of God be with you all.
And also with you.
Let's share that peace with one another.
Thank you.
Somebody turn off the projector. There's a up on the top there. Up on the top in the back. No, on the top.
Right there.
Yeah, right. Yep. That's okay. Let me say that I did ask Mari and Janine for a copy of their wedding video and for their permission to share it with the community here at Holden. They've both been here to Holden and thought that that would be fine with them and to share some of their story. Comments, questions, reactions?
What is the purpose of two women getting married?
What
would be the purpose of two women getting married? Is it so that they feel right about having sex? Because certainly you can have a friend of the same sex who you consider a hand-holding friend, mm-hmm. a hugging friend, and yet you aren't going to get married to them. So is this to make them feel better about having sex?
I can't comment. I don't know anything about their sex life.
Okay, for anybody.
I can't comment on that. But they very much in love with one another, a part of the community, and wanted to make some public commitments to one another and to celebrate that in the context of the community that knows them so well, and something that they felt very powerful about, something that they wanted to do, and that the church wanted
really
to recognize.
If you like somebody of the same sex, you should get married.
No, if you love somebody, you want to get married, why shouldn't you get married?
Well, I guess I thought marriage was a family and strengthening of the family, and I guess I don't see where family comes in here except their extended family. They aren't going to produce mm-hmm. a family.
So if a heterosexual couple isn't intending to have children, they shouldn't get married either.
I think it's that marriage is something that most people long for. And when you find someone, whether you're homosexual or heterosexual, you want to show your commitment to the community, to the people that you love, and be considered a peer. You know, and that's what breaks up a lot of people that are not married. If you're not thought of as a couple, you know, when you think of someone as a couple, you invite them together to do things. I think that, you know, being able to have a commitment ceremony is really important for gay people.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, there's a variety there. I mean, this is sort of the top of the line to have a formal ceremony like this and call it a marriage. And they, you know, Mari and Janine say, we're married.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm just conservative enough that basically I thought that wasn't all right.
Yeah.
I thought it said others, in different places in the Bible that was not right, but I, you know.
Yeah.
From previous discussions here, is it married, her husband died, she has children.
Yeah, she married.
It's not that she doesn't have a family.
Mari had been, she was a widow, had grown children, and Mari and Janine were working, you know, side by side, very closely together, and both of them very much involved in the church. I've heard their story around the dinner table, and you know, they knew each other quite some time before they realized that they just had great love and affection for one another, and that they wanted to spend the rest of their life together. Mari has a sort of a retirement home on the Oregon coast that she had built, and they're very eager to spend out their days together in that home. And they love each other very much, and they're a very, very loving couple. So you see them together, talk to them. They have great affection for one another. Yes.
I was kind of intrigued by their wedding garments. Mm-hmm. Was that their idea, or were?
That was their idea.
They make them themselves.
They made those, and they put a lot of thought into the ceremony and worked with the pastors and. So this is.
Did they pretty much design the ceremony, or was it themselves, or do you know?
Well, you know, parts of it, you know, were taken from the traditional wedding ceremony. Yeah. There was, first of all, the declaration of consent, you know, then the exchange of vows and the exchange of rings. So it's, you know.
Curiosity, and you, first thing, in your church, gays and lesbians, are they fairly evenly divided between men and women? And likewise, then, as far as having some sort of a ceremony, what they call marriage, holy union, or a blessing, is that fairly evenly divided between as far as men and women are concerned?
Yeah, it's hard to give percentages. It's about, I would say, yeah, it's sort of about roughly a third gay men, a third lesbian women, and then a third straight people of both genders.
Do you find then, as far as wanting some sort of a ceremony, that is as common amongst the gay men as you do amongst the men?
Yeah, among some of the gay men. Some will move in together and are roommates. Others and have no interest in having a ceremony like that. Don't see that as necessary. You know, others do want to honor their commitment in some way. So it's. It varies. It's not. And some don't like calling it a marriage, a wedding ceremony. They prefer to call it a holy union. You've been joined in a holy union. Just so that it's differentiated. And in San Francisco, there's a domestic partners law, so that they can be registered as a couple at City Hall, and they're. Partner is eligible for, you know, they're not married per se in the eyes of the state, but they, in San Francisco, the partner has to get health coverage by the other's employers and has rights of survivorship and things like that. So it's, there are some legal rights that go along with being joined in holy union.
I have a son that's gay, and it took me a long time to accept it. But then, you know, when you love your son, you love your child, you're going to accept what his orientation is. And, you know, we weren't ever estranged or anything, and I'm very thankful for that. And what you said yesterday in the class about we've interpreted the Bible a pretty, you know, pretty straight as far as, I always think of Romans 8. Mm-hmm. But I wondered for the people that were here before, if you could explain that, you know, why we don't have to think of them as condemned to hell.
Yeah, well, there's nothing in the Bible that sanctions same-sex relationships, but the whole ethic of Jesus is one of love. You know, love one another as I have loved you. Love your neighbor as yourself. And there's a grace of love in there that I think, you know, overrides any specific restrictions. Jesus, the Old Testament permitted divorce. Jesus condemned it, certainly, as divorce was being practiced there. But then out of love and out of justice for the way women were being treated by a society that permitted them to just say, well, you know, I'm done with you. You know, I have no need, and you're divorced, and with no recourse. And Jesus condemned that, not because he wanted to make the law stricter, but because it was unjust to women, and again, because of his deep love for all people.
Well, I think it's just so important that gay people feel the grace of God and know that he loves them just as much as any straight person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that there are so many gay people, particularly among my son's friends, that really don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I should tell them.
Yeah, the message that most of them have got from the church is that there's something wrong with them.
No.
They're perverts. and to go to hell and get out of here. We don't want you hanging around here teaching Sunday school. You know, we don't want you to be a part of our community. And that message comes through loud and clear by many churches, and it's not right. And St. Francis, I mean, we're in the middle of a gay community. You know, this is our neighborhood. And as a matter of outreach, somebody asked about the mixture of the church. As it turned out, about the end of the 80s, the church, just because of where it's located, had many, many gay members, probably by that time 50%, and no lesbian women that were affiliated with the church. And just for some of the dynamics, lesbian women just don't trust men, gay or straight, and to come to church and see, you know, men up there conducting worship and men preaching in the pulpit is just not something that they resonated with. So as a matter of outreach, St. Francis decided, in order to really reach the community that we know is out there, we really need to call a lesbian pastor so that community can be represented here, so we can do some outreach and gatherings of the lost sheep that we know are out there that don't trust the church because of the way they've been treated. That's why Pastor Frost and Zilhart were called, out of a legitimate need to reach out to our neighborhood. And as a result of that, it worked. We have many, many lesbian members now that see that this is a church that I can trust, where I can feel comfortable, I won't be condemned, I can experience the love of God, I can hear the gospel in language that I can resonate with. Another part of that is we pay very close attention to the inclusive language, because we know that, you know, many, many women just recoil at his, you know, God the Father, all this kind of male imagery, you know, and am I created in the image of God? If God is, you know, some guy with a white beard? No. So another way we have try to reach out to that community is to be really serious about using inclusive language. Even changing the words of the hymns. We can't use a hymnal because there's always something that just doesn't bring one. So we print all the hymns in our bulletin and change the words where necessary so that it's more inclusive in the use of language. Yeah?
One of the presiders was also a mission. Is it Rubel that was the bishop?
No. You may have known Bishop Stan Olson was in the congregation. He's a retired bishop. But no, but there were...
Who was the deacon?
The deacon was Greg Egertson.
No, his dad
is a bishop that attended Anita Hill's ordination. That's Greg Egertson, Bishop Paul Egertson's son. So he's a very, very active in St. Francis.
You said Bishop Chilstrom was there?
No. Okay. Just as an invited guest, Bishop Bishop Stan Olson was there. Okay. He's a retired LCA bishop, a friend of Mari's. Let me ask you, say your son is gay and he has a number of gay friends. Have any of them formed a relationship that they had honored in church, somehow, Holy Union? Or?
Yes. My son lived in Boston for about 8 years. And I mean, he grew up in Eastern Washington on the farm, and then he went to Seattle and then back east. And two of his friends back in Boston were married, I think it was last summer, and it was very, you know, we weren't invited, but I mean, it wasn't that large a wedding, but, you know, they had all the tuxes and the, you know, very beautiful wedding. And what's really interesting to me is the guy I know, I mean, the man that I know, Dan, he has now gone into the seminary. And I just think that's great. He made so much money selling computers that now he can go to school and not worry about it.
Boy, you'll both need to do that to afford to go to seminary.
So in my son and his partner, I hope they do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and this, you know, unless you have a family member, maybe it's hard to understand, but starting about 2 or 3 years ago, I prayed that Greg would find someone. I don't want him to be alone the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. He's 45 years old now, and he was lonely. And so I feel like God answered my prayer. Mm-hmm. And I never, ever dreamed I'd pray for that kind of a situation.
Why would the church want to forbid that for informing, you know, loving, lifelong relationships like that and not recognizing it?
One of my brothers is gay, and he's not in a committed relationship now, but I know in talking with him, and he lives in Florida, he said he's known gay men that have been in committed relationships for 30 years or more. I mean, there's a lot of heterosexual marriages that, you know, don't last that long. I have been divorced, and sometimes it is lonely. I mean, you make it, it gets by. So I think, personally, if we can find a partner or whatever and not be happy in that, I think that's good.
I think we also see that in the heterosexual community is that two people have lost spouses. Mm-hmm. And they come together because they find love again, and they marry, and it's not for the image of family and procreation, and it's an issue of loving and caring. And so I think we see the same situation that you see here, mm-hmm. that it's people out further on in their lives that have met someone they love, and they want to express that. And we see this every day with our parents. That they come into the same kind of loving, committed relationship. And it's not for the reasons that we've all been told we are supposed to be in a relationship.
And sometimes it's not legal. We had a wedding in our church between that older couple that, for tax reasons or whatever, didn't want to recognize by the state. But they felt it very important to have it, you know, God recognize it, so have a...
But for tax purposes, they are and Social Security. Yeah, I think the Lutheran Church really has a lot of latitude in this area, because we've never considered marriage to be a sacrament the way the Roman Catholic Church does, or the Orthodox Church. You know, we have two sacraments, or three, some would say, but, you know, baptism and Holy Communion. Instituted by God, the visible word, means of grace. Those are sacraments. Marriage has always been considered by Lutherans as a contract between two people that's acted out in the context of the Christian community with God's blessing, the blessing and support of the community. That's why in the Lutheran liturgy, there's nothing where the pastor or priest says, I declare you man and wife, or whatever like that. It's not something that the church grants. It's vows that two people make to one another, and it's not a sacrament in the same way that baptism and Holy Communion are. So, you know, theologically, there's a lot of latitude. And I think St. Francis has been very bold in taking the lead on this. I'm not sure. And, you know, it's not for everybody, but for people who really, you know, want to make public commitments like that and make lifelong vows, and are active church members, devout Christians, they want to do it in the context of a community, and expect the community to support them in their relationship. That's why you part of the ceremony was asking the congregation, will you support them in their life together? Other comments and reactions?
It's interesting to use the word, words, I pronounce them man and wife, but it really is husband and wife. I found changing that word like 30 years ago or 40 years ago.
Yeah, in the LBW, I think that's it's not in the LBW. Where that comes from is from the Anglican service, and that's the one. If you see a wedding on TV, you always use the Book of Common Prayer. And Anglicans consider marriage to be a sacrament, and it's something that's performed by the church, not simply a contract between two people.
Well,
that's
where that language comes from. Instead of saying man and wife, husband and wife.
Yeah, but that's
man,
not...
A man doesn't... I mean, the man doesn't stay a man, and the woman becomes a wife. Whereas rather, the man becomes a husband,
neither of those is in the Lutheran service. No. In fact, maybe there's an LBW. Yeah, much of the liturgy here was taken from the LBW and with some creative additions, and that poem that they wanted to have read. Any pastors here remember what page the wedding service was on? Any pastors here willing to go out of the closet? The best pastor. Jesus. Pastor Jesus. What page is it?
I saw you say occasional services, but I've never heard.
Okay.
Is it Beth?
Marriage 202. I'm saying 121, that's Baptist.
Last resort.
So this is how that's done in the Lutheran service. So-and-so and so-and-so, by their promises before God and in the presence of this congregation, have bound themselves to one another as husband and wife. That's what it says here. But it's nobody's proclaiming that. They have bound themselves together. In this service, I think they use that and said, have bound yourselves together in this service of marriage or something like that. So they didn't use any kind of terminology. But again, it reflects the Lutheran theology that marriage is again a contract between two people, one which God's blessing is. Yeah.
What's been your experience being a pastor at this church, and just your experience in? Have you what's the word? Presiding at. Unions. Have you?
Yeah, I have not, and there has not been a union ceremony at St. Francis since I've been there.
Have you? Would you do it? Opportunity.
I would love to experience that.
Yeah.
Is there any repercussions from the church itself doing that now?
Well, St. Francis is not. We're not part of any denomination. We're an independent church, and this isn't some quirky thing that some goofball pastor decided to do. This was discussed, and this is a policy of the church vote. You know, discussed at the church council, and it's a policy to perform these sorts of ceremonies.
I know I go to an Episcopal church, and just recently there was a big part of the conservative part of the church joined the Church of Rwanda. And our pastor got up and said, you know, this is about hate. Let's look at it and say what it is. But what I've seen among my gay friends is a real anger toward Christianity.
Sure.
And just to bring it up, it's like this, you know. I hate that. I hate seeing that. But I understand it. I mean, I do understand it. I was there for a while myself. So I really like what you do, and I think it's a wonderful work.
I have a friend who's a pastor in Canada, in the United Church of Canada. He told me it was harder for him to come out to his gay friends that he was a Christian.
Yeah.
Serious, than it was to come out to his congregation that he was gay.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And we're members of the United Church of Christ, and they do meet us.
Does the denomination have like an approved or suggested, you know, ceremony or rite, or is it?
No, I don't think
they
do. This is my partner Linda. We've been together 15 years, and you know, I would have loved to have done that, and I would have done it in a heartbeat. But now it seems so stupid after 15 years, you know, playing this like relationship that, you know, all our families and friends and church members already know about. We had a private relationship, just the two of us. A commitment ceremony is what we call it. We exchanged rings and we, you know, vowed to each other to
them. Yeah, it was just the two of us?
Just the two of us, because, you know, back then it was the
mid-80s,
and man, you wouldn't do that.
So why isn't that enough? I mean, why, if it had been available, would you have wanted to have a public ceremony?
Because I think it's an affirmation in front of God and all your family and friends and your whole community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a celebration of their love instead of, you know, keeping it hidden.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just really happy that, you know, there are churches now who are becoming more open-minded and they're having these discussions.
Mm-hmm. In your congregation, are you recognized as a couple?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
it's okay to sit together in church and hold hands?
Yeah.
And
we're on the board of trustees, and we're very involved in the church.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't go otherwise. I wouldn't go.
Unless I was accepted. The theme is wholeness, and we recently had a gentleman come to our congregation whose partner of 50 years died in his arms a year ago, and he told the story of how they had been excluded from their own church, that their relationship with God was as private as their relationship with each other because of their exclusion. And his joy at coming to our church and being able to be a whole person because he's accepted there, but his sorrow at having spent 50 years without the joy of a congregation, without the joy of sharing the gift of God with a group of people. It's one of those very bittersweet
things. Sure, and people understand the grief that he has as he mourns the loss of his longtime partner. Yeah, not just,
I've had a number of people say to me, why couldn't they just stay in the closet? It was just better that way, you know. Nobody had to have opposite opinions.
Like an alcoholic.
Yeah. But I think that would have been terribly unfair. It's kind of like, if you're, like, for instance, I have bipolar disorder. I don't need to go around saying that to people. But it wouldn't be right if I could never talk about it. And but that it's not an illness, you know, but it's just a orientation that's different.
Yeah, and I think we see this in all aspects of society. The problems that used to be, I mean, alcoholism was, you didn't talk about it, you know, and AA was really anonymous. And now it's, I mean, you see, you know, movie stars on television, I mean, it's we talk about, you know, child abuse and it's quite common for people to say, certainly St. Francis, say, this week I celebrated my 10th year of sobriety, you know, and people are not proud, but they're willing to talk about it. Say, yes, I'm an alcoholic. Years ago, that was, I mean, boy, there was real anonymity about that.
When you're a cured alcoholic, you don't keep on drinking.
I think it's I think it's really important.
But you don't drink. You don't keep on.
Yeah, you're never cured. It's a lifetime disease.
I think it's really important in the context of a discussion like this. I know a lot of people have really strong opinions, but I always feel a little bit, I mean, I'm of a kind of a new generation. I'm a lesbian, and I'm totally out, and I'm younger than a lot of people who have gone through a lot more pain than I have, because I've been lucky enough to come out into, you know, a family that's really accepted, come out into communities where it's not even an issue necessarily. It's actually much more of an issue, like your friend said, you know, in the context of the Christian church, yeah. Much less of an issue in my, you know, necessarily a life that isn't necessarily, you know, centered in the church. And then a place like Holden, where you can actually have a life that's centered around the church, but that's also an accepted community. But all of this is trying to say, I feel very uncomfortable with the the analogy that people use to kind of describe the process of, you know, what it is what it is to be gay or lesbian or homosexual, if that's the word you're going to use, or whatever word you're going to use, or the whole coming out process, to describe that with a lot of the kind of terrible, horrible things that our culture is starting to talk about too. Yes, it's really great that as a culture we're talking about child abuse. Like, that's so terribly important. It's terribly important for those tons of children and adults out there who are survivors of abuse. You know, it's terribly important to talk about one's alcoholism, or to talk about one's, you know, drug abuse, or to talk about, like, the myriad of problems and issues that we have as a culture and have as, you know, individuals. But I don't think, if we're going to start talking about on the same page about anything, like, to talk about homosexuality and to talk about gays and lesbians, to talk about same-sex unions or marriages, like, we can't start from that analogy, I guess.
Yeah. I was just saying that people talk about stuff that they didn't used to talk about.
And I totally hear
that. I think a better analogy is left-handedness. And my dad, he was born in 1908, and he's convinced that he was naturally left-handed, but when he went to school, you know, they said, no, stop doing that. You write with your right hand, and he had terrible handwriting. But he remembers, you know, just naturally want to write with his left hand and being whumped for that. And this was not a Catholic school; it's a public school, where the teacher whacking him with a ruler and saying, "No, use the right hand. That's how you."
That's white choice.
And God is left-handed. Because Jesus is sitting on his right hand.
Very good.
We get so focused on the gay and lesbian issues. I mean, if we people who are going to the Mall of America or Las Vegas, or they stand in front of the Justice of Peace, they do not have a religious ceremony. Is that in the eyes of those of us that are in the church any less or any more than a form of marriage? It's not sanctioned by the church. It's not part of the church, but we accept that.
Yeah, and there's a ceremony in here for I think it's called the blessing of a civil wedding or something like that. Yeah. So it's a way to kind of acknowledge that and ask the church's blessing on something that's already been.
And again, it's a matter of people who love each other
coming into the union in a different form than we have in the church. They're outside the church.
Yeah. Now, we've gotten to the point, we get a lot of couples that come in and want to get married and have nothing to do with the church. Does that happen to get gay and lesbian couples? That'd be kind of interesting to get to that point.
Occasionally, we're, you know, we don't. My colleague Pastor Zilhart did a wedding, but not in the church. It was over somebody's one of those backyard weddings that I hate to get involved in. You show up and everybody the bar's already been open for 3 hours, you know. and they want to have the dog in the wedding party and all this. Don't do a backyard wedding.
You told the story of St. Francis calling the lesbian clergy, but can you tell us the action the ELCA took and why you're no longer, why St. Francis is no longer in the ELCA?
St. Francis, and I wasn't around then, so I don't know. I don't understand why, because I don't think that's going to happen again, why they expelled the church. Why didn't they just say, well, that they're not, you know, this isn't a proper call, but they're, I mean, there's a lot, there was a Lutheran church up the road from me in Philadelphia. They had a Baptist guy on staff. He was the minister of adult education, and he, you know, they just hired him, and he wasn't, you know, on the roster or anything like that. Nobody did anything to them. I think it was kind of a witch hunt, and they didn't take any kind of discipline against the pastors that had participated in the ordination, had laid hands on those who were ordained, but the congregations were disciplined and said, you know, you can't. And I don't understand why the church chose to do what they did. And I've been told that they'll never do that again. That churches that employ and call non-rostered clergy, particularly gay and lesbian, who refuse to take a vow of celibacy, they're not going to get, they'll be admonished and censured or whatever word you want to call it, but they're not going to be expelled the way St. Francis was.
I think that's what they did to St. Paul Reformation, that Anita Hill ordination just recently. I think they were admonished, but the ELC now is going, or the Synod is going to study that, study the situation, so they didn't.
Yeah,
that's
so. Kind of
at least have a study.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to do something. It's a contextual thing. I mean, the society is changing. I mean, San Francisco is different from Hartville, North Dakota. It's just a different context, different community there. I don't think anybody is saying that, you know, a church is required to call a gay or lesbian pastor, but to churches, I mean, in St. Francis' case, it was for all the good reasons. We wanted to, for evangelism, we wanted to reach out to an unchurched community that was right in our neighborhood. I mean, we wanted to welcome them into our membership and bring them the gospel and all the things that urban churches are supposed to do, you know. Mm-hmm. But and I don't understand why. And I wasn't there. I was on the East Coast at the time. I quote attended the ordination. We had a sort of a radio hookup in Washington D.C. and listened in and had a Eucharist in conjunction with it. But I don't know the politics of why the church decided to take the action that it did. It's just.
Are you a rostered,
kind of stupid.
Are you a rostered clergy on the ELCA now?
I am, and officially on leave from call because I haven't. I'm not called by ELCA congregation, so I'm currently on the roster on leave from call in the Southeast Pennsylvania Synod. Which my bishop is Bishop Roy Almquist, who is just a great guy and very supportive, and I'm not even in the synod that St. Francis used to be in. my membership was on, still on the East Coast.
So, if you decide to go to another church at some later point, you're still in the ELCA and you can go.
I guess. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I don't plan to go to another church. I just started here, and I'm 56, so probably stay here until I retire or die. Yeah. Or go crazy. or get hit by one of the crazy drivers at San Francisco.
I guess the time was probably about up.
I don't have watches at 6 o'clock yet.
10 minutes after.
10 minutes after. Thank you.
Thank you.